Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hey, everybody. Welcome. It's Kegel Lasso. It's our weekend recap. We have Heath Pierce and Jonathan Johnson. We talk, of course, Arsenal's self-imploding situation. Tottenham and Liverpool drop points. We go all around Europe, including Lucien Favre losing his job with Borussia Dortmund. We talk Serie A. We talk PSG against Lyon and a possibly really dangerous, really bad injury for Neymar. We talk MLS Cup, of course, and so much more. Stay right here. Kegel Lasso begins right now. Welcome, everybody, to Que Golazo, our weekend recap. My man Heath Pierce right here. Jonathan Johnson will join us in a little bit. And we begin. There's a lot to talk about, Heath, including MLS Cup, the rest of Europe, of course. But we begin with pretty much what we just witnessed. Arsenal self-imploding once again. Burnley beat Arsenal 1-0 at the Emirates. Courtesy of a Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang own goal. In the league, it's their fourth loss out of the last five. In that period, they've conceded eight. They've only scored one. They're 5 points, Heath, above the relegation zone, and it's mid-December. This is no longer just funny rhetoric. This is, I think, alarm bells right now for Arsenal, Mikel Arteta's project. I am not saying that it's just Mikel Arteta here. I think everybody should shoulder some responsibility, but we are now talking about a situation where they're entering one of the busiest periods in the entire year, and they are 5 points above the relegation zone. The next up is not an easy game against Southampton. Heath Pierce, talk to me. You love this club. You know this club. What's going on, man?
Well, first of all, Granit Xhaka, another sending off is never going to be a good situation when you're playing against anyone. But, you know, I'm not a huge fan of Granit Xhaka. There was no, again, Thomas Partey. You never thought you would be saying something like Burnley's playing Arsenal in a relegation battle, right? They are literally 5 points out of the relegation zone. I think right now, if I'm looking at the live table, 5 points out of the relegation zone against a team that was in the relegation zone prior to beating them today, right? When Man City played Burnley a few weeks back, they saw that as the slump buster, right? As like, oh, this is who we're going to go bag a bunch of goals on and get our season back on track. Obviously, there was a little hiccup and a very big snooze fest in the Manchester derby, but that's against Manchester. But they looked at Burnley historically as the team that they go up and they beat and they batter and they then get their confidence back, which they did. And Arsenal weren't able to do that. And you have to look at Mikel Arteta now, 13 points after 12 games. A little more than 1 point per game in your first 12 matches, right? And going into the season and the Thomas Partey, is it Partey or Partey? I keep getting this wrong.
Partey, I think we're going to go.
Partey, yeah, it's Partey. And I keep getting it wrong for no reason other than the fact that it's stuck in my head now and I'll always get it wrong at this point. But that signing was going to take them to the next level. And it's finally this really good signing that was going to change things for them. And the first couple of games, you're like, wow, exciting. He's so good. And this team is so good. But now you look at them and in the table, they're struggling. And it's this really hard period of the season where you have this like insult to injury type of situation that you lose to a Burnley. And all respect to Burnley for getting the result. But Burnley's a relegation team. They were on 6 points before today. And now you go and you drop points to them. It is just a long way to get past anyone. You know, you're sitting in 15th place. Just to finish respectably is going to be a hard thing, let alone, you know, climbing out of this mess that they've created.
Yeah. Mikel Arteta was interviewed, obviously, after the game, and he was asked by Sky Sports, you know, do you think about this issue every day and what's going on? He's like, every day I'm thinking about this problem. And he said that, quote, we need to score a goal. We need to put the ball in the back of the net. You see how the team work. We are top. We were top on the beginning form, the moment to when we had a player sent off. He believes that the player sent off changed everything. But to your point, Heath, this is Burnley we're talking about. This is not Liverpool. This is not Manchester United. This is not even, you know, an Everton. This is Burnley, with all due respect, a team that really has been surviving in the Premier League for many years now, and Burnley at home, and Burnley at home with fans back in the stadium. There's a lot here that really could have pushed the momentum. And to be honest with you, I don't want to point the fingers completely at Arteta, but today he made some key mistakes. I don't know why Xhaka, even before the red card, was selected, to be honest. I don't know why somebody like Bellerin, who really has not been at the top level of what he can do, has been selected, to be honest. There's been so many problems that you just begin to think, you know, is it something that's going on behind closed doors? Do they not respect him, which is kind of amazing to me? Do they not react to his strategy, his philosophy? And now you're thinking, we're hitting mid-December, it's Christmas period, and, you know, the conversation should be, is this the man for the job?
Yeah, you're spot on with that. You really do have to question it. And if you look at the successful managers, Jurgen Klopp was given plenty of time, and he was given real money in transfer windows to bring in the right players. And he's been given that at Arsenal. And I think that needs to come again in the winter. But you've been given a chance now in this season, like you have in Europa League, to play young players. You can salvage this by changing the mentality of the club through younger players. And you can sacrifice results when you have younger players if you have a plan with what you're going to do, whether that's adding younger players and bringing in some new signings. But you can't tell me that Granit Xhaka has the quality consistently to be an Arsenal player. Willian was a notoriously inconsistent player during his Chelsea years. Like, very good when he's on, but very bad when he's off. And he's kind of, again, a mixed bag. Aubameyang, new contract and not scoring goals. The thing that they could rely on consistently was, hey, let's try to keep a clean sheet, but we know Alba's going to, keep us in games. Hasn't kept anybody in games, you know, and they can't figure out how they want to start the team. Do you want to play with Aubameyang up top? Do you want Lacazette to be your man up top? Really tinkering a lot, over-tinkering also with, what's the right team? Who's going to prove themselves to be a starter? I do like starting competition, but 12 games into the season now, you have to look at it and say, what kind of year is this going to be? If your players aren't performing, do you need to change? Do you need to say, hey, maybe we should go with younger players and figure this out over time? Or do you think that you stay the course and eventually the results are going to come? I think it's now one of those times that you have to shift and take a look at some of your young players that have actually done well in Europa League and rep them in and get them those minutes needed that you wouldn't otherwise. If you're playing in the top six, those young players are never going to get the chance. You're giving them Europa League minutes. Now keep them into the team or put them into the team in the Premier League, so at least you're developing those players, because you're not getting anything out of these games. You play your best players or your most expensive players. They're not performing and you're losing games.
What about Mesut Ozil? There's comments maybe that he might come in at some point in this rotation. I mean, he's not just the answer, but there lies a player that can maybe give you an extra something. What about him?
You got to look at it and give him a chance. You know, when I was thrown out of my club, dishonorably discharged, we'll call it, when I was in Germany, and our team was struggling in the Bundesliga. We came back from training camp in January, and they, you know, long story short, they were like, I asked for a transfer. They said, hey, he's got a wrong attitude here. Not a transfer. I asked to leave by any means necessary. And they said, oh, he's got the wrong attitude. And back in that time, there was no real platform for you to stick up for yourself. So they give the story to Bild newspaper and then you pump it out. And now I'm kicked out of the team. I was still training with the club. And they're like, after a month, the team was struggling and I was playing really well. They're like, oh, his attitude has changed so much. And he's become, you know, blah, 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 blah. And I was back in the team again. And whether that's the case or not with Mesut Ozil, it is an opportunity. One, you're eating a fat wage with him. So why not? Why not? What do you stand to lose? Is he going to disrupt your locker room more than it's probably disrupted right now? No. Could he bring elements of his world-class capabilities? Absolutely. If it doesn't work, then he's out. I know that that's a hard thing for an Arteta, because you're like, well, if I go into this well and it doesn't work out, it's probably my job as well. But I don't think that's a bad potential solution. If it goes wrong, it continues to go wrong. But at least you're showing some creativity in your thinking. But yeah, I don't think that's a bad show.
They lose to Southampton on their next game, I believe, is Southampton. Just checking the lineup here. But if they lose that game, Heath, Arteta's gone. Do you think they play on Wednesday at home to Southampton? Then they're away at Everton. Then there's the quarterfinal in the EFL Cup against City. One of those, they lose. I feel like Arteta is done. Maybe not the EFL Cup, but at home to Southampton, away at Everton.
I mean, you know, Everton just beat Chelsea. Yeah. Southampton's fourth in the table. Like, these aren't, you know, Southampton, who did they play this weekend? They battered Sheffield, like 3-0. United. Like, this is those. They're hot. You don't want to play them either. And so there is a lot on the line right now, you know? So why not? Okay, maybe you continue to double down with stubbornness and believe in your players and show faith in them, and then maybe that's what turns it around. But there's clearly something off here, and it's not, again, when you look at Manchester United's poor results over time, you're like, it's not for a lack of quality. Right. They have a lot of quality. And it's the same thing with Arsenal. It's not for a lack of quality, but sometimes whether it's you know, form or it's morale or it's the issues with the manager, something is off and someone's got to take a deeper look into what it is and figure it out, because they're sitting a few points out or 5 points out of the relegation zone. I'm not worried about relegation, but it's more contextually, you know, you're putting yourself in the conversation with Fulham and with Burnley, and they both got points this weekend. So,
and I tell you what, my friend, I know that you're not worried about relegation, but this is the kind of year where nothing should be taken for granted. And the fact that 5 points above the drop zone for Arsenal in mid-December, woo, baby. What do you guys think? Send us your questions. Tweet us, Que Golazo Pod. Let's stay here in the Premier League. The Manchester Derby was an absolute bore, which we kind of sort of predicted. Liverpool and Tottenham were held actually this weekend. Tottenham held by Crystal Palace, Liverpool by Fulham. So, and Leicester City got a big win climbing up the table. So right now, as we're looking into the next week, Tottenham still lead on goal difference. Then Liverpool, Leicester City, Southampton, as you mentioned, Chelsea losing to Everton, West Ham getting that win against Leeds on Friday. We talked about the derby. Villa getting that late goal against Wolves, and the shape of the table is still, you know, up for discussion. But one thing is for sure, nobody seems unbeatable, and everybody seems vulnerable in one way or another.
Yeah, I would love to see this table stay like this through January, right? We'll probably see it start to, you start to create gaps as you go through this period through Boxing Day and into the new year. And, but there is a chance, because a lot of these big teams are playing each other, between now and into the start of the new year. So you could see a Southampton stay up higher. You could see a Leicester sitting in the top five still. And you could see it being a while before your Man Uniteds and Man Cities are really having any sort of impact on the top five or six. So, you know, I would love to see this out, because it's anybody's right now. Even Liverpool today could have jumped with a win, playing with, again, a weakened squad, but weren't able to get 3 points against Fulham. And same thing with Spurs, could have sat top of the table with a win, but Crystal Palace were very, very good in the second half. Could have won it themselves. Could have gone either way. Some really good chances. Actually, a really, really fun game. And uncharacteristic goal against with Spurs, you know, being that you would think that they'd be capable of seeing out the win the way that they have in the competition this year, when they go up one, of just being like, you know what, this is ours to take at 1-0. They weren't able to do that because Crystal Palace were really strong and set pieces are everything.
Yeah, absolutely. And to your point, listen, everybody, the games are going to come thick and fast in the Premier League. Tuesday, we begin matches. Wednesday, there's matches, including a big one as Liverpool host Tottenham. They go matches on Thursday, the weekend. So a lot is coming, and this Premier League gets exciting, especially as we approach the holiday. Well, we are in the holiday period. Stay right here, everybody, because when we come back, we will discuss MLS Cup and the rest of Europe. Stay right here. Welcome back, everybody, to Que Golazo. We continue this weekend recap with, of course, MLS Cup, the 25th season MLS Cup. And my goodness, Heath Pierce, were we wrong? And I feel like I was bullied into this one. Columbus Crew win 3-0. 3-0 against Seattle Sounders. Lucas Celayaran, we talked about him a lot. He got a great brace in this one. Etienne got another goal. Two goals in the first half before Celayaran finished it off. 3-0. A tremendous performance, Heath Pierce. And the Crew's second MLS Cup. And it really is quite a narrative.
Yeah, this comes down to a few things. One, we were definitely wrong, but we were also a little bit right. You know, we talked about Celayaran so much so that we were doing name pronunciations, which I thought, he was the man of the match by far. He was the MLS Cup MVP, and everything went through him. And you know, when you start to look at a guy like that, right? You talked about his pedigree on the show this week. On things, his ability to win, right? He comes with trophies, a winning caliber player, right? He's won things before. He's been in big matches. And we looked at Columbus and said, yeah, but without Darlington Nagbe, obviously Nagbe won one in Portland with Caleb Porter before. He was an important part of it, controls the flow of the game, and Pedro Santos being out as well. You say, you know what? This is like Seattle's to lose. How could they lose this? They're a playoff team. They're built to win championships, right? And they don't really care as much in the regular season. They're one, two, three. They're not really all that interested in the supporters shield, but they're always in it. They're that team that, you know, to put into context with the NBA, kind of like the LA Lakers, right? Where the regular season is just whatever. And then you crank it up a notch in the playoffs, and that's where you get your real glory. And yeah, they've won open cups and things like that in the past. The Seattle Sounders from the very beginning made the playoffs every single year, but they came out really flat. And that's all credit to Columbus Crew. They disrupted the game from the very beginning. They pressed high. They made him uncomfortable. And I want to start with, you know, and we'll work through it. But I want to start with Giassi Zardes. There were some people saying, well, he hasn't really been in the game much. He hasn't really done much. He didn't really do much in the final. But if you really look under the microscope, he did everything they needed him to do, right? He was the first line of press. He made it uncomfortable for the Seattle Sounders defense to play the game, and he made it predictable. I remember being both when I was a left fullback, a center back, when I played the sixth position at times. The best thing that could happen to your team in any game of consequence or even non-consequence is to have the game be predictable. And when that game is predictable, you're now able to have a Zelarayan who can cut passes out. You're now able to push your lineup and cheat the game a little bit, move up the field to know that, hey, we're going to bait them into trying to play through us. And when they do, we're going to jump on those. We're going to win those 50-50 balls. We're going to win the second balls, and then we're going to go at them. And they did that perfectly. And then you look at Zelarayan. First goal, right? And then the second one on an assist where it ends up being very similar to the third one, but instead of him taking that shot, that awareness to then pull it back, lay it off to allow somebody else to finish was magical. And then, you know, to put the nail in the coffin, it was incredible. And it was loud. It was a crazy atmosphere for the amount of fans that were there. It was in Columbus. And it was this storytelling thing that when you go, when you put Major League Soccer into context, 25 years, there is history for a number of clubs. Columbus Crew were the first soccer-specific stadium. They were one of the OGs. They were almost moved after this last season, right? There was this Save the Crew campaign, and dramatic fashion, they were able to win their last game in this stadium, which was the first soccer-specific stadium. And now they have a new ownership group. And it's just, it's those kinds of things that when you look 50 years down the line, you're going to look back at these memorable moments when this league is one of the marquee leagues in the world, right? I see it being definitely a top three league by that point, 25 years from now, if they can get through this COVID period, right? Being that it's a single entity structure and going through a lot at the league level. They're going to look back at these moments to say, hey, you know, you remember when they moved the Dodgers, Brooklyn, and you had the San Francisco Giants moved, and you have all these teams that moved in historic kind of traditional American sports. You're going to look back at this moment and say, hey, they saved the Crew. They were trying to move them to Austin. They were able to keep them. They won MLS Cup the next year. Caleb Porter is going to be remembered for these types of things. You know, a guy who hasn't gotten the respect as a manager because he has a lot of things about him. So it was a magical night, and we all teed ourselves up for this dynasty talk of Seattle Sounders, but Columbus Crew put an end to that from the very, very beginning, and they played a perfect game. Eloy Room came back on the into the team as a goalkeeper after having some time out with what I believe was COVID. And yeah, man, they did what we thought they would do in putting Aiden Morris on the field, 19-year-old, the youngest player to start in an MLS Cup final. All of these things created this magical night, and to win 3-0 at home in front of your fans, when everybody wrote you off before you went through the controversy of losing players. I could go on for hours about this. I was completely wrong, and they deserve all the respect. I don't want to for a second think that it was that Seattle lost this, because Columbus went out there and won this. It wasn't because Seattle didn't show up. It was because Columbus played a perfect game in a final.
I don't think there's anything more to add to that. I think that was a perfect conclusion to MLS Cup. Congratulations, Columbus Crew. Congratulations, because now it's gone from save the crew to finally, we are champs once again, Columbus Crew. Well done, Columbus Crew, on winning the 25th season on MLS Cup. We'll be right back when we cover much more Europe and we bring in our friend, Jonathan Johnson. Stay right here.
It's the NFL offseason, but on Pick 6, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, the football season never stops. Host Will Brinson, John Breach, and Tyler Sullivan are joined by analysts like Brady Quinn, Leslie Deuceable, Katie Mox, and RJ White to keep you in the loop on everything happening around the league. Whether it's free agents signing with new teams, the all-important NFL draft, or schedule release day, Pick 6 has you covered. As the face of the league changes with every team move and player pickup this spring, Pick 6 is a must listen. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and anywhere podcasts are found.
Let's go! It's the most all-star studded challenge ever. And this time, it's every competitor for themselves.
Best challenge ever!
The Challenge All-Stars. New season now streaming on Paramount Plus. Go to ParamountPlus.com to try it free. Terms apply.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Que Golazo. We have Heath Pierce. And coming in right now, Jonathan Johnson from Paris, as PSG just lost against Lyon. Huge implications in Ligue 1, but also very big news regarding Neymar. JJ, how are you, my friend? Hope everything's all right. Talk to me about this game and what happened towards the end of it.
Hey, all good here. Thanks. Thanks for having me back on. Always a pleasure. So obviously a big result in the Ligue 1 title race, and won a match that could have massive implications for the way that the title race shakes out, because not only do you have PSG losing, as losing for the fourth time this season in Ligue 1, losing for the third time to potential title contenders. We saw Marseille win at Parc des Princes. We've seen Lyon now win in Paris as well, and we saw PSG lose away at Monaco a few weeks ago after the most recent international break. So things not going well on that front, the result front for Thomas Tuchel and his players. But more of greater concern, I'd say, right now, in the immediate sense, is the injury to Neymar late on. Mendes was shown a red card after a VAR check, but you know, you just had to see and hear Neymar writhing around, crying out in pain, you know, and being taken off. It looks like it could be potentially a very bad ankle injury. I don't want to speculate as to how long he could be out at this moment in time. Obviously, we'll have to wait and see what's said after the game. You know, we're coming on to this quite hot at the moment. But you'd assume from that kind of reaction that he's going to be out for a while. Whether that has Champions League implications, we don't know yet. But in terms of the league, it already looks very unlikely that he's going to be back on the pitch in time for PSG going to Lille. And considering the situation that they find themselves in at the moment, now they've been knocked off of top spot and they've got a Marseille side 1 point behind them with two games in hand. You know, it is tighter than tight, and it's not looking good for PSG right now. And if they were to lose in Lille, I mean, assuming that nothing happens between now and that match next weekend with Thomas Tuchel, you know, you could legitimately see him getting sacked. You know, if PSG were to fall to a fifth defeat already this season, it's just unthinkable. But I'd say almost of greater concern than the result is some of the performances at the moment. It's lethargic. There's a massive lack of concentration. People will be demanding to know why Thomas Tuchel started Kylian Mbappe on the bench for this match, threw him on later on. It's a tactic that worked in the past, but the problem, the biggest problem I'd say for Thomas Tuchel, and it's been an issue for a while now, is it doesn't really look like what he's trying tactically anymore is really resonating with his players. They don't look like they're taking on board what he's saying. They're not putting his actions, into what they're doing on the pitch. And it is very concerning times from a PSG point of view. Great. From a neutral point of view, when you think of all the criticism that Ligue 1 has had, since PSG were taken over by the Qataris and have pretty much, had their own domestic hegemony, it is shaping up to be a really, really exciting title battle. It's great to see, names like Marseille back in the mix for the first time in a long time, Lyon as well. Let's not forget that they used to be, sort of what PSG are now, a massive domestic powerhouse, winning titles year after year, won 7 consecutively at the beginning of the 2000s. And you've even got dark horses in there like Monaco, who are rebuilding, and even Montpellier, who were, of course, pipped PSG to the title in the first season that the Qataris arrived in French football. So, it is exciting times, for neutral fans and fans of other clubs in that title hunt. But obviously, if you're of a PSG persuasion, it's quite concerning at the moment to see just how vulnerable this side is. And we'd even seen it in the Champions League up until that turnaround a couple of weeks ago, when they won at home to Leipzig, then managed to win away at Manchester United, and then won against Basaksehir, amid all of the scandal of the racism claims. So it's been a very eventful couple of weeks for PSG, but at this moment in time, their domestic form really is suffering.
Yes, 6 points, everybody, in Ligue 1 between 1st and 7th right now. It's quite a tight race. But yeah, the Neymar news is really, really worrying, not just for the club, but for him, of course. We'll see what happens. Jonathan Johnson, I want to keep you here. Just one more thing, as Heath and I now do a little Europe round discussion. Let's talk about Germany for a second, everybody. Bayer Leverkusen is top of the Bundesliga, sneakily just, everybody's talking about Dortmund and Bayern Munich, RB Leipzig, and here comes Leverkusen, Leon Bailey and Leverkusen, top of the Bundesliga. Great to see with that, Dortmund losing heavily this past weekend, meaning that Lucien Favre lost his job despite a great Gio Reyna goal. A lot to talk about in Germany. Heath, let's begin with you. Leverkusen top of the table, Dortmund looking bad. We're talking about Ligue 1 being tight. Germany also looking good.
Yeah, look, Leverkusen are one, it was against Hoffenheim. So a very difficult, difficult game. They were gifted one of their goals, but Leon Bailey's been hot the entire season. Florian Wirtz also really strong, the 17-year-old. He's been great. And now, it's wide open. When you have a Bayern Munich that's coughing up points, drawing against some of the smaller clubs, it makes things for parity. If you look across all the leagues right now, Premier League wide open, Bundesliga wide open, and Leverkusen have always been in that sort of top 4-5 position, not always, but traditionally. Gladbach as well, playing their role in all of that, but they've just been quiet. As you said, the conversation has been very much about this shiny new toy that is RB Leipzig and their sporting philosophy of playing young players. And you have Dortmund also, the sporting philosophy of playing young players. Before all of that, Leverkusen was doing that. And they have young players in their squad. And yeah, they have some older players too, but they've been able to escape the limelight quite a bit and just focus on getting results. And they've been able to do that. Now they're sitting top of the table heading into, again, a busy season.
Yeah. JJ?
I mean, one thing I would say that really, piques my curiosity about Leverkusen is, we're talking about the teams that were expected to be challenging for the title at the beginning of the season. And I think Leverkusen were dismissed because of what happened in the transfer window. We saw them lose Kai Havertz. And I think when people looked at that and thought, okay, they had their star man taken away from them, there's no way they're going to be able to replace his quality. Yet him leaving has actually enabled, some of the guys who had to share the limelight with him last season to shine that little bit brighter. Moussa Diaby, somebody who I know from his time in Ligue 1, has been very, very good this season. Lucas Alario as well has really come into it. Patrick Schick you know, looks like a very, very smart signing. You know, we'd seen him playing for Leipzig in the Bundesliga. Leverkusen managed to pick him up. And at the moment, it looks like a combination, you know, of a lot of hard work and, you know, some very smart transfer dealings, you know, have put Leverkusen at the top of the tree. The one, you know, note of caution I perhaps sound, you know, for Leverkusen between now and the end of the season is, you know, and I would love to see them maintain this form and keep the title race very, very exciting up until the final round of matches. But there will probably come a time, and you look at their form at the moment in the Europa League, they're absolutely destroying some of the teams they come up against. They won scoring a bunch of goals against Nice that I saw up close. Twice in the group stage, very impressive. I think they're the first German team ever to have scored over 20 goals in a Europa League group. And I just wonder if there's going to be a moment where they run out of a bit of gas, you know, whether they don't have the strength in depth or somebody picks up an unfortunate injury or there's a suspension or something. But at this moment in time, you know, they're one of the form teams and they're really, you know, milking that good form, which is absolutely what they have to do. You know, and fingers crossed it doesn't come to an end for them, because it would be a phenomenal story. I mean, I remember growing up with a very good Leverkusen side, as Heath mentioned, but they sort of they got this this Leverkusen moniker because they always came quite close. They were forever the bridesmaid, never the bride. And it's it would be quite a story for them to, you know, to come off the back of losing such a great talent as Havertz and then turn that into a potentially title winning season.
Yeah, very quickly on Dortmund, everybody. I mean, title contenders ahead of the season, but they lost their last three home games and trail Bayern Munich by 5 points, 11 match days into the season. Edin Terzic, Otto Addo and Sebastian Gever will take over until the end of the season. But who would you like to see in that hot seat? I mean, I think I know what Heath is going to say. Maybe JJ too. I don't know, because he is a friend of the show. What do you think, Heath? Who should take over very quickly? Who should be the manager then?
I think Julian Nagelsmann is probably higher up the list than Jesse Marsch, but I would like to see Jesse Marsch then step into that RB Leipzig and stay in that family because he obviously understands the system to that. I think it's a job to be lost for whoever comes in to a Dortmund. But my wild card is Pochettino. Why not? Throw a big name out.
Amazing.
Let's start bringing big names to the Bundesliga. Let's go.
What do you think, JJ?
You know what? Pochettino to Dortmund would be very exciting. I see a lot of logic as well in going for someone like Nagelsmann, with Marsch seemingly primed to step in and fill that void at Leverkusen should it arise. I'm going to throw out one potential curveball name. I think that a return to the Bundesliga with such a big club as Dortmund would make sense. I know he's doing fantastic things with Southampton, but Ralf Hasenhüttl to go back to Germany, I think could be a very smart move for Dortmund. It would take some convincing, I'm sure, but that's a move that I would like to see. Obviously, there's people talking up Ralf Rangnick as well. He's got a history with Schalke, but I think he'd want too much power for what Dortmund were prepared to offer, plus the rivalry between Schalke and Dortmund. I don't think he'd be particularly welcome at Westfalenstadion. So for me, I'd love to see Hasenhüttl.
I thought, Luis, when he said coming back to the Bundesliga, I thought you were going to say Jurgen Klinsmann for a second there.
No, he's not that crazy. But let's finish off here. Quick Euro roundup. By the way, we're talking about Ligue 1 being interesting, Bundesliga being interesting. Listen, Serie A, Milan just dropped some points here, tied against Parma. Napoli won, Inter won. So, you know, this is also a tight race. And then you go to Spain, with Real Madrid beating Atletico Madrid, handing Atletico their first loss in the league. Now with Barcelona also beating Levante, I mean, they still got their catching up to do. But all around Europe, you see some interesting storylines. Let's leave off with this. One final point from both of you. Just on anything else that we haven't discussed, I've talked about all these tight races. We've talked about the Premier League, but you're more than welcome to get yourself involved in there, JJ. Aston Villa Wolves is included as well. Any final points as we wrap up this weekend recap? Let's begin with you, JJ.
I mean, there's so many interesting points that you've already mentioned. I mean, the situation in Spain, what's going on in the Premier League. You know, I do agree with you. I do think that the situation in Italy, I mean, generally in Europe, in the bigger leagues, you know, to see the title races this tight, you know, is something that we've not seen for such a long time. And, you know, the usual suspects, you know, a lot of them are not even top of the pile at the moment. I mean, you know, we're talking about Italy right now. You look at Juve down in fourth. You know, it's very, very encouraging for the competitivity of these European leagues. You know, to have this refreshing scenario where we've got unexpected teams leading the way. You know, to see a great club like AC Milan finally getting themselves back into better health. Okay, they didn't get the result that they wanted against Parma, but still, you know, they're producing very good football on a regular basis now, getting some consistency together. You know, and if it was to play out, it was a sort of battle between AC and Inter Milan, you know, for the Italian title at the end of the season, that would be, you know, something that's very exciting. But there's so much to talk about in all of the major European leagues at the moment, because it's not at all going the way that we expected at the beginning of the season. And, you know, as frustrating as the situation has been with COVID and everything, you know, to have such an exciting, unpredictable season, you know, is also, you know, quite reinvigorating in a way.
Yeah, absolutely. Heath?
Yeah, I agree with that. I think, you know, there's as frustrating as it can be to be stuck at home for the most part. At least you're stuck at home with some really good leagues going on. But for me, look, Inter Milan and AC Milan have almost the exact identical record. But the biggest difference is AC Milan are still undefeated in the league, which I think means something. Of course, they dropped points today, but to be able to get one of those points back in stoppage time, I think, is a huge thing for them. And it's those little things. And it's also great to see Brahim Diaz coming to life finally after jumping around as a young professional to kind of looks like find his club and be in a system where he's getting plenty of minutes to develop. It'll be interesting to see him for the rest of the season. So yeah, that's my only take on this.
Beautiful. And I dedicate this weekend to Emiliano Martinez. Just watch his highlights. Everybody, JJ, thank you so much, brother.
Thanks a lot for having me on. Obviously delighted with the Villa results as well. So fingers crossed we'll be getting more of that in the next couple of weeks.
Absolutely. Heath is just realizing that he's in a Villa sandwich today.
Oh, Friday Night Lights. I'm all about it.
Heath, thank you so much, my man.
Thanks for having me.
I want to thank Heath Pierce and Jonathan Johnson for joining me today. Don't forget to follow us on Que Golazo Pod and stay with us, because very soon, in fact, the next episode, we have our very, very important Champions League draw and so much more coming next week. Have a great night.
From the world of Sonic the Hedgehog, a new hero arrives.
I am ready.
Is there anyone stronger?
No.
Tougher?
No.
Funnier?
I do not make jokes. I make warriors.
Knuckles, April 26th on Paramount+.
Yes!